Welcome to Christmas Clatter, the podcast that celebrates everything that makes Christmas special. Join us on Facebook and Instagram at Christmas Clatter Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Clatter Podcast. Email us at ChristmasClatterPodcast@gmail.com or visit our website at ChristmasClatterPodcast.com. Hi, welcome again to Christmas Clatter. I'm Todd Killian. Just a little over a week away from Christmas, guys. I can't believe it. Things are getting serious, more serious now than ever. Just great to be a part of your Christmas celebration. Thanks so much for listening to us, giving us your time. I know your time is precious, especially during the holiday season. So thanks so much for tuning in. I want to encourage everybody again to go to our website, ChristmasClatterPodcast.com. There's some great blogs there. I try to add a new blog every Sunday. Some funny stuff, some inspirational stuff. And they're not always by yours truly. I have some people helping me write those. And it's a lot of fun to dabble in that blogging world. Also, I made the announcement last week for Clatter Chatter. That's our free email newsletter starting in January from Christmas Clatter. Just go to the website. There's a form on the page to fill out. Just need your name and email address, and you can subscribe to Clatter Chatter. But as I was saying last week, I made the announcement that there will be a segment in Clatter Chatter every month. Our family has a cookie day tradition. Some of you may or may not know about where we have open house and prepare cookies for everybody to enjoy. This year we had 31 different flavors of cookies, and I'm not sure how many people came through the open house. It's a little bit more than we expected due to COVID, but we stayed as safe and followed all the guidelines we needed to. But over the past year or so, a lot of people asked me for those cookie recipes. I haven't really given any out, not that they're top secret or anything. It's just, I thought, well, maybe there's something else I could do with them. And so that announcement was that for each issue of Clatter Chatter, there will be a cookie recipe, a new cookie recipe each month. So that's worth the price of the subscription of free 99. So head on over if you haven't yet and subscribe to Clatter Chatter on ChristmasClatterPodcast.com. Do it at least for the cookie recipes, but we'll have other great stuff there too, like some behind-the-scenes stuff and extra content from our great guests, things like that for you guys to enjoy. Well, that's enough of me talking. Let's get into our game today. For this episode, we have Merry Melee 2. All right, joining me here for Christmas Clatter is Merry Melee 2. It's a game that was so fun, we decided to do it again, and I have no idea what I've gotten myself into with the second one. Well, I guess I do know what I got myself into. We have three fighters. We have four judges, if you count me, a little bit different judging situation than we had last time. More on that later. But joining me as fighters is April. She is a Hanukkah heavyweight. But don't let that distract you. She is full of Christmas spirit, and she is Dolly Parton's own little devil dog. She will die on a hill for Dolly Parton. Thanks.
I will fight somebody.
Thanks so much, April, for joining us here for Merry Melee.
Thank you for having me. Oh,
no problem. And our second fighter tonight is, don't call him Tommy Tom, from Tulsa, Oklahoma. He is the self-proclaimed winner of tonight's Merry Melee, and he just wanted everybody to know that at the beginning.
I really want to thank you for having me tonight, Todd, for giving us a chance to redeem Tis the Podcast after the terrible showing we had last time. I know if it were my show, I probably wouldn't have invited anybody from that podcast back because it was so awful, but I thank you for letting me come in and redeeming Julia and I. I'm not sure why y'all are laughing.
Speaking of the last Merry Melee, here to totally redeem himself is the New York menace,
the embodiment of Christmas cheer. Finally out from under the shadows of Tom, broken free from April's leash, the one and only Unchained, Anthony Caruso. Thanks for coming back, Anthony.
Thanks for having me back, Tom. I'm sorry you have to deal with
that's
the worst.
Todd. That's Todd. You said Tom. That's Todd. I'm Tom. You're not off to a great start, Anthony, at all.
Thank you, Todd, for having me.
The last time you get invited back.
Thank you for having me, Todd. I'm sorry that you have to deal with these two people along with me. But you know what? I'm not going to devolve into the personal politics of hate like the two of them are, because I'm confident enough in my answers.
Didn't you lose really bad last time?
Oh, you're absolutely right. He did. I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't want to point out who it was, but April, if you're okay with it, power to you, my friend.
And who's
You know what? I'm not going to even acknowledge their Sleepy Tom's and Crooked April's personal attacks tonight, because my answers will speak for themselves.
And if they don't, this has been rigged. Isn't that right, Diaper Tony?
I mean, it was rigged last time. I have better faith in the judges tonight. So.
Well, speaking of judges, who do I have to pull in to help me with this? Returning as judge is the Totally Rad Jerry D from Totally Rad Christmas Podcast. He is here only because I've been on his podcast 4 times, and my Jerry quota for Christmas Clatter is way down, so I need it more Jerry. Thanks for coming back, Jerry.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be a blast. I'm
sure it will be. It will be something. I'll guarantee that. It will be something. And who else could I bring in to help me wrangle this group but the person with the most experience of keeping Anthony and Tom in order for the past 3 years now, 3+ years now? Julia has been on those podcasts and keeping some semblance of order. So I had to bring Julia in from Tis the Podcast to help us out. Thanks so much for coming, Julia.
Thanks, Todd. Always a pleasure to see you and all of these amazing faces on the screen at the same time.
Judge Julia.
Shameless. Oh,
Lord. Tom's shaking his head.
Tom may be shaking his head, but for those of you who can't see Tom, he's wearing the shirt Julie got him last Christmas. So he's actually not buttering up a judge.
I'm not buttering up a judge. That would have even entered my mind, because I don't feel the need to manipulate. I don't have to sit around and talk about it being rigged, because I've got the answers that are going to win. I'm bringing the heat.
I have alluded to a different judging mechanism this time. So I have brought in a fourth judge, and you guys can't see him, but he's the guy up there in the corner that looks like he just witnessed a car wreck. Everybody knows him for his love of coffee and dank memes. And he is also a Christmas Clatter contributor for our blog post. It is the one and only Michael Kristelman. Michael, thanks for jumping on here with us.
Thank you. I shouldn't say thank you now. I'm going to say thank you maybe at the end of this. No, seriously, thank you.
We will crush all your illusions of what you thought it takes to make a podcast.
As well as...
Since we have 4 judges in the last Merry Melee, we only had 3. What I decided to do with Merry Melee 2 here is Jerry, Julia, and Michael will vote on which fighter they feel has won the argument. In case of a 3-way tie between Jerry, Julia, and Michael, I will step in and be the tie-breaking vote, but I will only have a vote in judging when there is a tie. Last time we ran into the situation where one of the judges thought that the third fighter had won, but he actually had to pick a fighter he didn't believe truly won. And I wanted to avoid that situation because I want the judges have 2 rules, one to listen and second to be honest. And you couldn't truly be honest if you had to pick a fighter you truly didn't feel won based on the rules. So that's why the judging is a little different, and hopefully we can continue this forward. So, fighters, if you're ready, let's go ahead and start with our first question. We'll read it. All right, question one. April, we'll be starting with you. The question is, which Harry Potter character, other than Harry Potter himself, deserves their own solo Christmas movie?
My answer would be Hagrid. Okay, so picture this. Movie opens with a Christmas tree on fire. What's happened? A baby dragon, Hagrid, has been hiding, got a little too close to a Christmas tree, and up it went. We follow our lovable, bumbling, kind-hearted Hagrid through a comedy of errors as he tries to get the students of Hogwarts staying behind for the holidays, especially Orphan Harry, a wonderful Christmas. Along the way, we get dragons setting Christmas trees on fire, Hagrid using the wand he's not supposed to be using to fix up a gift, and maybe a little too much to drink at the Hogshead Inn, where he accidentally spills the beans on Professor McGonagall's gift from Dumbledore. Look, Hagrid's best qualities include the things that make the holiday special. He's a gift giver, from the birthday cake he brought Harry when they first met to the brown wallet with fangs he gave Harry in Order of the Phoenix. Hagrid is kind and emotional. He'll do anything to help others, one of the best things about the holiday season. He's great with shopping, as we see in the very first book, and he tends to drink a little too much, just like the uncle at the family Christmas dinner. Hagrid is Christmas.
Alrighty, thank you. Tom, which Harry Potter character?
You know, that's not a bad answer, April. I really like the case you built, but I'm going to go in a different direction here. And I'm going to say that I want to see a Christmas special based on Sirius Black. Now, let's think about the Black family. Sirius Black is related to some of the darkest, most loyal, Voldemort loyal wizards that we see in the series, right? His cousin Bellatrix Lestrange is...
Bellatrix.
That's what I said. Excuse me, I believe my time is interrupted.
Reclaiming my time.
Are we finished? Okay, so he's related to these really dark wizards and witches in the wizarding world. What changed him? What brought Sirius Black to the good side? He's such close friends with Harry's dad. He's got this loyalty to Harry where he's willing to break out of prison. He's out of Azkaban, risking everything to go find Harry and give him what he wants. And he brings Harry hope. Why does he do this? I believe it's because he was brought into the Potter's family at Christmas time. And we see an entire redemption arc where we watch his character change, where we see the seeds of love and hope and all that Christmas brings enter into the life of Sirius Black. And that's a change that lasts throughout his entire lifetime.
All right, Anthony.
First of all, I have to commend Tom and April on their great answers. Sadly, they don't adhere to the canon set out in the Harry Potter books, but I'll get to that in my rebuttal. So I chose Arthur Weasley as an answer for this question. So, little background. One of the wonderful things about the holiday season is obviously the fact that it can transform even the most bitter of adults back into a child again, and fill them with the wonder of the season. And Arthur Weasley is a character who lives with this wonder every day of his life. Look at him in the books and the movies. He's fascinated and amused by all the little things Muggles have invented, like rubber ducks and escalators. Now picture Arthur Weasley, who is a genuinely good man, an amazing father, an awesome husband, filled with all of his wonder and acceptance as the star of a Christmas movie. It could be set post-Harry Potter. All the children are out of the house. He has grandchildren. Now imagine him having a Christmas with Hermione's parents, like the both Hermione and Ron, the in-laws coming together, and Arthur is trying to incorporate the Muggle and the wizard traditions together and give his grandkids the most magical Christmas there is, ending with him coming down the chimney in a puff of flu powder dressed as Santa for his children. Or you could go the complete opposite direction. Everyone's out of the house. Him and Molly go to Muggle London, and he's like amazed by all the Muggle things Muggles do to celebrate Christmas. And he, you know, melts Molly's heart in a Linus moment that Muggles aren't as bad as Muggle inventions aren't as bad as she thinks they are. He is the clear choice for a solo Christmas movie because he embodies the Christmas spirit every day and every month of the year already in the Harry Potter books.
All right, excellent. All right, the floor is open for debate, guys.
I just have to say, I just have to point out, by far, the Arthur Weasley is the most boring one we could possibly have. Arthur Weasley's time on screen throughout the Harry Potters and in the books was dull. It's just dull.
And just Sirius Black canonically can't even have a Christmas movie because he died less than a year after graduating. He was arrested less than a year after graduating Hogwarts by canon standards. And he tells Harry in the Order of the Phoenix, he tells Harry in the Order of the Phoenix, he hates Christmas. He hates Christmas. So you're going to disregard canon character.
We don't know why he hates Christmas. We don't know the full reason he hates Christmas.
By the time he dies,
something
he
could have changed.
Love Christmas.
Something could have changed. For all you know, maybe his parents. Maybe something happened further down the line. I'm talking when he's a kid. What made Sirius Black change? What made him abandon everything that his family held dear? What did it? And I'm going to say it was the Christmas magic. True, something else may have bad have happened that could have turned him later. But I'm going to tell you right now, watching Arthur Weasley sit around and play with a widget is for 2.5 hours. Come on, nobody's going to watch that.
You're taking what I said out of freaking context. I said trying to bring together the Muggle and wizard traditions. Having him try to throw the perfect Christmas for his grandkids would be no different than having a wizard, Clark Griswold, throw the perfect Christmas for his extended family, except a lot more fun and a lot more fish out of water, number one.
So what we're saying is derivative.
That's basically the Star Wars holiday special with creatures. We're going to have an hour of Grop and Buckbeak and Thestrals talking without subtitles while he's sitting there drinking. And sorry to say this as well,
you don't match
the canon of Harry Potter either, because you said including the orphan Harry. We know Hagrid did nothing to make Harry's Christmases special at Hogwarts.
Okay, so in terms of Arthur Weasley, he likes Muggle things. How are you wrapping up into Christmas at all? How are you making the long jump all the way to a 2-hour-long Christmas movie because Arthur Weasley likes Muggle things? He's barely a character within the books. And let's talk about Sirius Black.
Harry's real dad in the books, but okay.
I would just say that I would expect something from this. I would expect something from someone like this who talks about how great a Christmas story is.
You're talking about other people on this podcast who like, I saw a lot of those judges like a Christmas story too.
That's fine. I'm more than happy to go into that on the next question. I'm just saying this is what I expect from you.
And let's talk about Sirius Black. Sirius Black, there's no even remote way that you can tie that into a 2-hour-long Christmas movie.
Absolutely.
You sure back could. Past, here's exactly what you do.
You have to adhere to the canon set. You may have something
that was set at Christmas that develops his character arc at best. That's not a Christmas movie.
If he's at their house and has the experience, like we have this whole buildup of him trying to struggle between what his family is and what and the goodness that is the Potter family. And
there's not enough blank spaces in Sirius's backstory.
We don't know what happened when Sirius was 7 years old, Anthony.
He said he had an abusive childhood.
Correct.
It's not a Christmas movie.
Correct. No, an abusive childhood. And why? Okay. So tell me with all the canon, why did he leave his family? What in the canon brought him to the good side? You can't. There's a missing hole.
Meeting
that we can
his
fill.
Friends at Hogwarts. It's in the canon.
It is, but what happened to bring what happened to make to bring them so close? Meeting a friend. Okay, I met Anthony. Hold on, wait. I met Anthony, and I'm not evil. Just because you meet somebody doesn't mean it fundamentally changes who you are as a person to align with them. And Anthony has not become a good person in the last 3.5 years.
His character arc begins on a Christmas day. The rest of the character, he's just not all of a sudden a great man, Sirius Black, on that Christmas day.
Thank you. Your worst answer.
The Grinch, we're talking about The Grinch, one of the most iconic Christmas movies, where his entire character changes in one single moment.
You're talking about Sirius Black.
I sure am.
And The Grinch put up with it for years. Yeah, there's years of backstory there.
It takes something to change, to help an abused child who is brought up in a cult to change of heart.
and a beautiful moment.
You're right. It does take something to help it.
It's not just
style.
Friendship at college.
Weasley did it over 8 years, over 7 years in books, and welcome him literally into the family when Harry married their daughter. Thank you.
Yeah. Todd, Arthur
Judge.
Harry didn't need to be changed. Harry came to the university a good person. There was no point at which Harry was
abused.
He was, but he did not fundamentally change from a bad person to a good person just by coming to Hogwarts.
Thank you.
Well, Anthony's the one that brought him up when I said that something fundamentally has to change.
You brought up abused children.
And Harry was neglected more than abused.
Which can be even worse mentally.
April, the question is, deserves their own Christmas movie? Tell us in your closing statement why you think Hagrid deserves the Christmas movie.
Hagrid deserves the Christmas movie because he's a loving, giving, kind-hearted man. And those are some of the best things about the Christmas season. And I would like to see Hagrid through the holiday season, trying to make Hogwarts wonderful at Christmas time.
All right. Tom, why does Sirius Black deserve a Christmas movie?
I need to know what happened.
Finish the question, Tom.
Something fundamentally happened in Sirius Black's history to change him as a youngster. What that is, I don't know. I would like to know more, and I would like to believe that it's tied somehow to having a genuine redemptive arc taking place at Christmas, much like we see so many other characters whose hearts melt. They grow two sizes. I would like to see that happen as a child. We see Harry, we see James and Sirius being mean at points at times as a child, and I think that a few years after that, before he gets arrested, would be a wonderful time for him to have a great holiday experience. That could, easily be written off as being destroyed either at a Christmas event after he's found out, or later in his life, or who knows what kind of torture happened to him at Azkaban that could make him hate things. I don't know, but apparently Azkaban's pretty bad and can do a lot of things to your mind, so. I'm going to say that I want to see the redemptive arc. I want to see a child from a horrible family with an awful upbringing become good and be changed by the spirit of Christmas, as opposed to seeing some boring guy who likes muggle things or a large oaf simpleton playing games with animals.
Tom, stop talking about yourself, please. This is about Harry Potter right now.
That was weak. That wasn't even worth a laugh, Anthony. You're going to have to try harder.
All right.
That's as weak as your argument.
All right, Anthony, why does Arthur Weasley deserve his own Christmas movie?
Because he is the Clark Griswold of the Harry Potter universe, and it would be National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation in the Wizarding World. He's a loving dad, an amazing father, and an awesome husband who does everything for his family. And his Christmas movie would be a movie about your dysfunctional family Christmas, having all these kids home with different personalities and their spouses and their grandkids and the in-laws, in which he is trying to meld Christmas traditions together, both muggle and wizard. And that is perfect for family comedy and fish out of water comedy. And, he is the only character on this list of the three where you wouldn't have to change the canon to do a proper movie.
Not true.
To disregard the canon.
Not true.
All right.
You had your chance.
All right.
Derivative at best.
All right. All right, judges, you have your work cut out for us.
Not really.
So, Jerry, you're the judge that's up first. Tell us your thoughts.
Wow. Some very good arguments from everybody. April, I actually, I know that uncle that you're talking about. I think that would be a great Christmas movie. Tom, there's always something amazing about seeing a curmudgeon, just have that transformative experience and become, the genuine Christmas fanatic, or, just feel the spirit. And Anthony, I do think that seeing Arthur Weasley trying to, meld all those things would be entertaining as well. This was tough. I think y'all had a lot of good points. Sometimes I couldn't always hear them, but honestly, the best arguments, I thought were in to me, I thought the best argument was from Tom, and I would like to see Sirius Black's transformative experience. So my point goes to Tom.
And
wow, rigged. Both the Orthodox guys going for each other.
Actually, he's Catholic. I need to remind you, as you are.
Okay, guys. All right, Julie, what were your thoughts?
Okay, so my thoughts. I mean, I'll echo Jerry for sure on the all great arguments. I would like to see these characters featured in any future Christmas anything. Like, give me anything Harry Potter Christmas, and I'm totally game for it. April, you painted a picture of Hagrid. I can see every bit of those scenes, and they all make me very happy. Tom, Sirius Black is my favorite character in the Harry Potter universe. I cry the hardest when he dies. Spoiler alert, if anybody... hasn't seen that. It's fine. The clock has run out on spoiler alerts. Okay. So, and then Anthony, the Weasleys are my family. They're my literary family, which is why I'm giving my vote to Anthony in this case, because a Weasley Christmas involves not just Arthur, but every other Weasley. And to me, all of the scenes in the book with the Weasleys are my favorite, most familiar feeling scenes that I can relate to or hope to relate to. So I'm going for a Weasley family Christmas.
All righty, Michael.
Okay, well, as far as the spoiler out of the bag, I've never seen any of the Harry Potters. So I know. Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
I know.
All
three of you made great arguments, and April, I really like the scenes you laid out. But actually, I've got to go with Tom because the redemption arc is just, that's the thing to me. So I'm sorry, Anthony and April, but the point goes to Tom.
All right, Tom takes point number one in Merry Melee 2.
Just prepare to cry if you ever read or watch them, Michael.
I don't care how many times you rewatch them. Every stinky there are two characters that I lose it on every time, and one of them I just opened the Funko Pop from last year.
Oh, cool!
Last year? You mean yesterday for the calendar?
No, last year's calendar that I because remember I have two this year. I didn't do last year's. Last year I'm doing them both this year.
Oh, okay, cool.
Also, can I just say while we're talking about that, while we're still in Harry Potter? The Dumbledore holding baby Harry is the single greatest Funko Pop I have ever seen in my life.
Right? Although he's holding him a weird way. A very
he
weird
is.
Way. So he's kind of like taking him over.
All right. Let's move on to question number two. And Tom, you're up first for number two. And this is kind of in honor of Jerry being here with Totally Red. What is the best Christmas movie from the 1980s?
You know, when I read this, I read, what is the best Christmas movie from the 80s and why is it National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation? So that's what I went with. I'm going to just say this was, but in all seriousness, this was the hardest question for me because the 80s were so chock full of great Christmas movies. I think it's the fact that they were amazing and the fact that they're so embedded in what Christmas is to me. But the one I loved the most was Christmas Vacation. And I'm going to go with that one because I loved it as a kid, right? I absolutely loved this movie as a kid. There were so many things that were funny, but there was so much stuff also that I didn't understand until I got older. This is great for kids. This is great for adults. It is one of the most quotable Christmas movies of all times. And I mean, Chevy Chase, Beverly D'Angelo. I'm done.
All right. Anthony?
I just want to echo what Tom said in that the 80s is full of amazing Christmas movies. So this one was also very hard for me. harder as you all know that my first choice wasn't picked. So, I am going with A Christmas Story because while there is no denying at all that Christmas Vacation and Scrooge are iconic and beloved, there is no doubt objectively that A Christmas Story is the best Christmas film of the 80s. Firstly, it's as American as apple pie and as iconic as It's a Wonderful Life. It's also clearly truly beloved by the masses because while their movie, Christmas or otherwise, gets 24-hour straight playtime on TV every year, 37 years later, it has staying power. And it still brings in the ratings and has truly become a family tradition for those wanting to gather around the TV late night with their whole family and watch something that they love. All this aside, my definition of a perfect Christmas movie as a great Christmas movie, it has to appeal to the entire family. The best Christmas movies like Elf, which we're all massive fans here, are filled with a sense of childlike wonder that will appeal to young children in addition to the adults watching the films. And that's key for why this movie is arguably the best Christmas movie of the 80s. It appeals to the whole family. Christmas Vacation Scrooged, while hilarious, are a little bit more risque and appeal more toward older audiences, as evidenced by the fact that they have PG-13 ratings. While A Christmas Story is rated PG and has something both of those lack, which is a child main character. So the children have a point of view to enter that movie from, and adults have a point of view. They can. It's such a nostalgic type of film. They can remember their childhood through Ralphie, or at the very least, put themselves in the shoes of his parents, especially the old man in that iconic scene at the end where he watches his son with nothing but joy on his face open the gift he's asked for all year long.
Alrighty. April, what do you say?
I say it is Scrooged. And I had picked also Christmas Vacation first, but that's besides the point because we watch Scrooged religiously in this house. So aside from being the love child of A Christmas Carol and the 1980s, Scrooge is funny and it's a top-notch twist on this classic tale. The Tale of Ebenezer Scrooge is one of the oldest stories there is. Add in Bill Murray, one of the kings of the 80s, and it's instantly the best Christmas movie the 80s has produced. They've done remakes of A Christmas Carol repeatedly, but this one is... it's just quintessential 80s. From VCR being the big Christmas present that everybody oohs and ahs about, to the shoulder pads that the women wear, to the tab soda being used to mix the drink by Lou Hayward, to the use of a phone book to look up the number for the local AMP, the movie is very solidly an 80s movie. It's a perfect example of fashion and life in the 80s. So many of the actors, from Bill Murray to the cameos of his brothers we often see in the 80s films, to Karen Allen and Bobcat Goldthwait, so many of these actors are just like peak 1980s. So it's not only a good movie from the 80s, but it's something that you can watch and you know it's from the 80s. So it's something that it's kind of like a little time capsule that you can look back on and see exactly how things were in the 80s.
April, I want to at least thank you for not picking a movie that is wrought with racism. It's nice to be able to. It's nice to have a movie that.
Don't thank her. She loves that movie.
Hey, it doesn't matter.
We all picked Christmas Vacation as our first choice. So I don't know what you we love all three of those movies. I don't know what you're talking about.
We do not love all three of those movies. We do not.
Most of us do. I know you don't.
Correct.
There's no accounting for taste, number one. And two, April, I would say, that's a good argument. Honestly, very good argument. But I will say being a time capsule for the 80s almost works against your argument because Christmas Vacation and A Christmas Story are at least timeless, that they're not stuck to the decade.
But at the same time, we didn't ask what is a timeless movie from the
80s. No, they worked what is the best movie from the 80s, not what's the best 80s film. So I think quintessentially a Christmas film has to be timeless regardless of what decade it's from.
I'm going to disagree. A Christmas Vacation. Well, then that definitely goes against your story because your story is a Make America Great Again douchebag.
My story isn't even set in the 80s.
Exactly.
Thank you.
That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. It's made in the 80s.
It's a Make America Great Again douchebag looking back at his childhood and longing for bygone era that's full of racism.
Okay. My perfect idea of a Christmas movie is somebody perving on the underwear saleswoman at the mall or staring out the window next to his little freaking niece, imagining instead of Cousin Eddie out there, it's a woman stripping down. Real family friendly, iconic Christmas movie. Tom.
Now, Anthony, this is a hypocritical argument from you. Given the canon of Kiss the Podcast and what you recorded talking about. And what you like in your movie.
You don't trust me, you don't want to talk hypocritical arguments at the next few questions coming up. So think carefully about this line of attack.
Oh, I sure. I do. I'm good. I'm going to say Scrooged is a bit dated, and that's a problem for it. And we noticed that when we rewatched it recently. I will give Anthony that.
Yes, we did.
But what I will say is I would rather watch that any day.
You're able to look back and know it's from the 80s.
I would watch that every day over the wry, cheap attempt at Garrison Keillor style nonsense humor.
Real cheap. You're insulting all of the listeners of this show.
No, it doesn't.
Including at least three of the judges.
My argument.
Four judges who love this film.
It's wry number at one. Best.
Number
it's
two.
An attempt at being.
If you want to talk about important Christmas movies, how many other movies made non-Christmassy things like a stripper's leg lamp and like a BB gun and like a pair of bunny pajamas iconic to the Christmas season where there are tons of Christmas ornaments?
There's a reason that is,
start,
and that's because
in every Hallmark.
That's because it's shoved down your throat ad nauseum by TBS every year.
It's shoved down our throat ad nauseum because it has the audience.
And also,
even though it's 4 hours, do you see that any other time during the Christmas season? No, because. Oh, it's background noise on Christmas Day.
Amen.
Because people are nostalgia.
And how many times do you see Scrooge? You see Scrooge three times on AMC during the month.
Nights ago.
Exactly. Three times during the whole month. It does not. It gets the least play out of every other Christmas movie.
So
it gets the least play out of every other major Christmas movie.
I contribute to those ratings. We don't watch it. It's background noise because I grew up with it. That's all that it is. There's nothing great about it.
You could argue the same thing with Scrooge. At least A Christmas Story gets ratings.
I watch Scrooge, though.
Yeah, I watch A Christmas Story. So that's a fundamental argument because that's a flawed argument because it's going to change every single person.
Yeah. Okay, Tom.
The voiceover is terrible. Oh, I was just going to say.
Go ahead.
My final argument.
Go ahead and start.
My final argument is that I picked a movie that is iconic that you want to watch for the movie. You can pick it up at any point and you love it. It doesn't have to start at the beginning or go to the end. I like it for that reason. It is timeless. It fits for whenever you want to watch it. There are some issues with Anthony's choice that I'm going to say. Like I said, it's got a Garrison Keillor, a fake attempt to be wry witty. The voiceovers are awful. Also to downplay a Christmas Vacation because of a scene in the store when we're lusting after a lamp that he wants.
Two scenes.
Fragile lamp also. Bleh, get over it. That's kids. That's like far below me. The humor, the characters that we have, the humor that we have in Christmas Vacation is transcendent. It always lasts. Cousin Eddie is a thing unto himself. You have this awesome family. Every member of the family contributes to the dysfunction and brings humor. There's somebody that everybody can relate to in this, unlike the other two movies.
Okay, Anthony, closing argument for Christmas Story.
Yeah, it's the most timeless of the three. It's the most long-lasting of the three. 37 years, it still gets a 24-hour marathon every year.
It's cheap.
It has become so iconic that things from the movie has transcended the film that you wouldn't normally associate with Christmas. The house was turned into a Christmas museum in Ohio because of this movie. It's not as dated as Scrooged, which I love, and not as adult as Christmas Vacation. If you're looking for the movie to show your kids, as I said, in my opinion, a good Christmas movie should be enjoyed by the whole family. And both of those are a little too risque to show a young kid. So that puts A Christmas Story over the edge for me compared to the other two.
Okay, April, your closing statements.
A Christmas Carol is the most timeless story there is when it comes to Christmas. This was an 80s Christmas question. You combine the two and you literally have a baby that is Scrooge. Yes, it might be dated, but it's something that might that eventually when my kids can watch, or my older kids can watch it, but we're not looking for a family Christmas movie here. We're looking for an 80s Christmas movie. When my kids watch it, they recognize that's from the 80s. They don't recognize that with A Christmas Story. They don't recognize that necessarily with it's a little iffy with Christmas Vacation. But you put the two of them, you put the timeless tale of Scrooge together with the 1980s, and that is Scrooge.
All right. Thank you. We'll close this argument. Julia, how do you judge this?
So while I like two of these three movies, and Anthony, this will be zero amount of surprise to you because you know I'm not a Christmas Story fan. The arguments are all valid. because my husband quite loves Christmas Story. We both love Scrooged, but there is kind of no contest for me. Christmas Vacation is not only one of my favorite 80s Christmas movies, it's one of my favorite Christmas movies of all time anywhere. So it's an easy one for me. Christmas Vacation. Tom gets a point.
Alrighty, Michael.
All three are great movies. But I got to give Anthony the point. Christmas Story is a classic. Well, they're all classics, obviously, but Christmas Story is, it's a perfect movie. And anyway, Anthony's got the point for this one.
All right, Jerry.
Oh man, you all had some great, great arguments. I mean, Anthony, yeah, the 24-hour marathon of it is like the argument, you know, par excellence in this case. Tom, you actually picked like my all-time favorite Christmas movie. If you had just said this one little thing, I totally would have given you the point. And, you know, when both of the other contestants mentioned that they picked Christmas Vacation as their top choice also, I would have pounced on that. And, you know, that would have been like perfect fuel. Like, it's so timeless that they both picked it as well, but you missed it. And so I don't know, man. And April. Yeah. I gotcha. April, I think yours was the strongest argument as far as best Christmas. Now, Scrooge and Christmas Vacation are both in my top three. And so it was really hard because Anthony had some great arguments as well, like just objective arguments. But when we're talking about 80s, I think you're right. I think the most 80s out of all these movies is Scrooged. And A Christmas Carol, Anthony, you mentioned timeless. It doesn't get more timeless than A Christmas Carol. So I'm going to have to go give the point to April here.
Ooh. Uh-oh, we need a tiebreaker from Todd.
Three ways high.
Now I'm feeling bad for trolling Todd when just a minute ago.
well, Tom, Jerry was right. You need to, if you're going to hear everything everybody says, you can use it against them. But if he would have pounced on the fact that Anthony right out of the gate said that Christmas Vacation was his first choice, I thought you would take that and run. You didn't. That hindered your argument a little bit. And I think that two arguments, though, Tom, it came down to you and to Anthony. For one, both of you made the point that Scrooge isn't played that much anymore. You know, whereas Christmas Vacation is quotable, it gets runs in theaters this time of year. Christmas Story gets its own marathon on TBS.
In all fairness, that's because the rights are cheap and nobody wants it.
No, you can't okay. Make your argument now. It's judging time.
But I think I'm going to give the point to Anthony because I just think Christmas Story is all in all the best of the 1980s based on the arguments that they gave us tonight. So Anthony gets a point.
I find it odd that we pick an 80s movie that isn't even 80s. Don't you, April?
No, you know,
hey, April and I can talk. We can talk. It just feels weird that we
free and fair judging here.
It just feels weird that we're picking a movie based in the 80s, not an 80s movie. That's all I'm saying.
I agree.
Well, we'll see how much these fighters like me after this next twist. The question was supposed to be best children's Christmas movie. However, here on Christmas Clatter, we want the best Christmas movie fighters. And part of being the best Christmas movie fighters is being able to roll with the punches. So we are having a blind fight for this next question.
Let's do it!
I have four envelopes marked 1, 2, 3, and 4. These have your answers in them, but you won't get the question until after you get your answers. So Anthony, you're due up first. So which envelope would you want? 1, 2, 3. You want number 3? It's number 3. And your answer is Patrick Stewart.
Oh, is this the best Scrooge?
All right. And April, you were due up second, so you want 1, 2, or 4?
1.
Number 1. Your answer is Jim Carrey. And Tom, you have number two or number four?
Four.
Number four. Christopher Plummer. All right. Everybody remember their answers. I'll give you a few seconds. And here is the question for our blind fight. Which of these actors would be the best Santa Claus? I'll give you just a...
Who is Christopher Plummer?
Who? What was that?
Who is Christopher Plummer?
The Sound of Music.
The dad in The Sound of Music.
Sound of Music. He played Scrooge in...
right there.
In The Man Who Invented Christmas. The Man Who Invented Christmas.
Look at you, Michael. Nice. I like it.
All right.
That wasn't planned.
Whenever you're ready, Anthony, you can start. I threw these guys for a loop.
As far as evil laughs go, Todd, you got to work on it a little bit. It's just still sounds too jolly.
As I stall here while you guys get your thoughts together, nobody picked envelope number two.
I'm not. I don't need to stall. I think we should be going right now. I'm ready.
No.
Michael Caine.
I'm ready.
Ah.
Michael Caine would have been envelope number two.
Michael Caine is the only one out of that list that could beat Christopher Plummer.
Oh, wait, he's not on there. Never mind.
all four of these actors at one point played an Ebenezer Scrooge. So that's where I pulled the judges' names for. And Julia knew this whole time this was coming, and she didn't give you guys any warning on it.
Julia! Julia!
Hey, that's what I would expect. I do have a problem with mine, though, Todd. Christopher Plummer has played Santa.
He has.
He sure did. In 2003, he was in the movie Blizzard, and he played Santa.
Oh, looks like somebody was Googling for his
I was Googling to look at the names of his movies is all. And nowhere were we told we could not use the Googles to check that either.
Look, for me, what makes the best Santa Claus is he has to have both the air of kindness. I've talked about this on Tis a Podcast before. He has to have the perfect mix of kindness with gravitas and also a little bit of sternness for the naughty kids. Like, you know, he has to have this weight about him and not just hefty weight. Ha ha ha. He has to have he has to be almost be intimidating. Like if you're a kid, you're meeting your childhood hero, right? If you're an adult, you're meeting this guy who you thought was a work of fiction. Like he has to be intimidating in a way while still having that twinkle in his eye, that lovely smile. And I think that's who Patrick Stewart is as a person. He's a classically trained Shakespearean actor who has done comedies and drama. The Brits make the best Santa Clauses. Just look at David Huddleston in Santa Claus the Movie, one of the absolute greatest of all time. And Patrick Stewart, I feel like he's one of these actors who it's only a matter of time before they get cast in Santa Claus eventually. Put on a fat suit, he's Santa made. Yeah, he has the twinkle in his eye, the smile. He's intimidating. He could be the nicest guy. He's the nicest guy on the planet. I love his social media. I love his interviews. He is hilarious. He's nice. But you meet him, you're going to be intimidated by this guy who's an Oscar winner, who's been in thousands of movies. Like, he is Santa. He is somebody who is approachable, but at the same time, somebody you'd be intimidated to be in their presence. And that's who Santa Claus is for me. And I think it's only a matter of time before he plays Santa.
All right. April, Jim Carrey.
Boy.
bless you. It's your time to really shine, April.
We've all seen Bad Santa, right? Sometimes you just need a Santa Claus movie with a little bit of all. We've got enough heartwarming Santas from Ed Asner to every other guy who's ever played Santa. But here we have somebody that, you know, you could take kind of dark comedy, there's a drunk Santa that is putting Tic Tacs in a kid's, you know, because he's run out of candy canes and he's got nothing putting Tic Tacs in a kid's paw. That's what I have Jim Carrey in as Santa. And I think he's grown a beard recently, so.
Tom, Chris.
Close to dying, so we could like put this off for a few years, and he's probably the only one who's still going to be alive.
My condolences to April for having to pull that out. I give you immense mad props for what you just pulled off that nobody here believed.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say, based on Anthony's arguments, that Christopher Plummer stands better in a better position for Santa than Patrick Stewart. First of all, we're looking at the range of characters. Christopher Plummer's career goes back, I mean, to some of the most iconic films we have. Not only that, he's been involved in Christmas several times. He showed a wide range of acting between being able to capture that intimidating figure like he did in The Sound of Music. He's also already been cast as Santa, so this is not a new role for him. It's kind of like Ed Asner when he came to Elf. He'd already been down that road. He'd perfected it. He was strong in it. So Christopher Plummer's voice is amazing. All the narrator work he does, I can see him just pulling off that stern but heartwarming Santa. And I mean, I agree with Anthony on what they need. I'm just going to say that he would do a better job of that than Patrick Stewart. And to me, Patrick Stewart's voice would get in the way of being Santa. His voice is just not a Santa voice at all.
All right. Open for discussion, guys.
Okay. You don't speak right now. Okay. Because I got something to say. I don't want to be trampled over this time. The two people that you guys have are terrifyingly old. Like, do you remember that Ed Asner video, you guys, the cameo that you guys got from him over the summer? And it was like, oh, God bless, this man is too old for this kind of stuff. Those are your guys. They are too old for this kind of stuff.
Patrick Stewart has all his senses.
Fall off, and it's just, it's that's scary.
Patrick Stewart has all of his senses, and Tom, his voice won't get in the way because David Huddleston was British.
It's not the British part that bothers me. It's Patrick Stewart's voice itself.
I think a perk of having Patrick Stewart is that amass the array of talent he could bring with him. Picture this, bringing Ian McKellen on as either the head elf or the villain he's facing, since they're best friends. Ian McKellen as Belschnickel. Ian McKellen as Krampus. Ian McKellen as a wise old elf at the North Pole who is Santa's
confidant. So you're basing your whole argument on somebody who's not being.
No, I told you my whole thing. My argument is certain actors can bring certain talent with them, and Patrick Stewart has an array of talent he can bring with him, including Sir Ian McKellen. Patrick Stewart as Santa Claus speaks for himself. I told you why he'd make the best Santa. And I still think that stands true.
You've got enough heartwarming but firm Santa Clauses out there already. In 16 different movies, you can find a Santa Claus that they're nice, and but they've got that firmness and that twinkle in their eyes.
Right there. There's a reason why on the screen.
The fact that he played Santa doesn't mean he's a good Santa, because how many of us have seen the movie in which Christopher Plummer has played Santa?
But you're
some of us didn't.
No, wait.
That speaks to his ability.
No, it has nothing to do with his ability whatsoever.
Why isn't it a more beloved movie? Wait. Cover that up. Guys, name the movie Christopher Plummer played Santa in. No, I'm saying I don't think it should be a fair argument that just because he played Santa means he would be a good Santa. Ed Asner played Santa in a bunch of crappy made for straight
and he did well with
movies. He was an amazing Santa.
He's done well in a lot of things. He did well in Storybots. I mean, he's done it time and time again. That argument doesn't really make sense. Just because he's done it in a movie that you haven't heard of does not negate the fact that he would be a good Santa.
I think if he had made a good Santa, he would have stood out.
Not a good-looking Santa.
Yeah, he looks like a scary Santa.
He looks like a good Santa. That's a beautiful beard. What about that beautiful beard?
It's dirty.
It's not dirty. You're dirty.
It's dirty.
He looks like what Patrick Stewart would look like as Santa.
But I didn't think that into this, what we were playing the we were going to get into ageism and start discriminating against people because of their age.
Yeah, yeah. That what an absurd argument.
I'm just looking at somebody who can make it through production and filming.
This is they're both still doing movies. So I mean, I think that the fact that the people who are funding these movies are still casting them says something. My wife's grandfather lived to be a very healthy 99 years old and was active walking 3 miles a day until his life.
I'm just gonna wrap this up by saying Santa Claus is such an iconic, so often portrayed character. It's almost Shakespearean at this point. And which one of these actors is a Shakespearean actor?
Which one of these actors is always himself playing somebody else? Patrick Stewart.
That's not true about Patrick Stewart. That's a bad faith argument. Everything Patrick Stewart does anymore
is Patrick Stewart being Patrick Stewart pretending to be something else.
Okay, Anthony.
Wait. April, talk.
Okay, April.
Argument against Jim Carrey.
Jim,
what?
I just want to let them know that neither they battled each other out, but neither of them actually produced.
That's because Jim Carrey has no place.
Because your argument was so weak.
There's no reason for Jim Carrey.
Your argument was so weak.
You want my argument against Jim Carrey? Jim Carrey. Again, I already apologized for you being dealt that hand. Anthony and I didn't even see a reason to merit the time to discuss Jim Carrey as a possibility, which speaks mounds.
Okay. All right, Anthony, give us your final thought on why Patrick Stewart would be the better Santa Claus.
Out of these three, well, we just wrote off Jim Carrey because he's not even a competitor. And as far as Christopher Plummer goes, I mean, come on. Patrick Stewart is made for Santa Claus. He is Santa without the beard and the suit. Have you seen this guy in interviews? Have you seen this guy's movies? He's Santa. Come on.
All right,
April. That's all I have to say.
April.
I made my point.
April, your closing argument.
The man is not Santa. We've got six, 12, 18 different, you know, Santas with twinkles in their eyes and old, and you know, let's go a different direction for once or twice and get another bad Santa movie, a drunk Santa movie, and put Jim Carrey in it.
All right.
Tom, Jim Carrey's already ruined enough Palmer. Christmas movies. He almost completely single-handedly destroyed The Grinch. In April, you can't deny that. That was awful. I do not want to give that man another chance to ruin something else that's near and dear to all of us. Patrick Stewart is pedantic. He insists upon himself. If you want a Santa that comes across as too much over the top and like I said, insisting upon himself, almost condescending at times, go with Patrick Stewart. Christopher Plummer, great guy, been around for years, does good stuff. I don't think I'm going to be honest and I'm going to say, I don't think any three of these are going to steal the show as Santa. We didn't come out with the best. Patrick Stewart sure isn't going to do it. Jim Carrey's going to ruin whatever he's in. And I think Christopher Plummer is going to bring a strong game. Anthony, you had your time. All right. You reminded me at this point, I had already had my time.
Okay.
I wanted to ask Tom a question. It was not to fight him. You just called Christopher Plummer a great guy. Do you know?
I do actually. Yes, thank you. We have coffee. We have coffee every.
Okay, I just wanted to confirm that. You know, a bunch of people
every couple of months we have beer, but you know, COVID's kind of slowed that down a little bit.
All right, Michael, you are the first up to judge which one of these made the best argument for the best Santa.
Okay, I think April said. I agree with April that all of them do not have the face. They kind of need a round face to play Santa. They all have a long face. It's just too bad that Michael Caine was not picked April is totally right. None of them actually look like they have a face for Santa. I give the point to Anthony. I think it was Tom and Anthony both said you need somebody who can project that air of sternness and like be a best friend's kid. I'm giving the point to Anthony.
All right, Jerry.
April, I'm so sorry. You So literally it is between which old white guy is better. And both of them, by the way, are Shakespearean actors, just so you know. You know, because you kind of mentioned that only Patrick Stewart was Anthony, but both of them are. As much as I'd love to see Captain Picard and Professor X be Santa, I want to go with Christopher Plummer because there's an episode of The Cosby Show where he's dealing with Rudy. He's an English professor, and they recite these lines from Shakespeare, and it's I believe it's from Macbeth, and it's amazing the way he deals with Rudy. He reads like her own story, and it's perfect. I can see why he was cast as Santa, even if no one has ever seen that movie ever, but I can see why. And so, as much as I would like to see Patrick Stewart, be Santa, I'm going to give the point to Tom because I think I'd rather see Christopher Plummer first, but I would like to see both.
All right, Julia.
So I actually also wanted to say that Jim Carrey has been Santa before. There's a Funnier Die skit out there with Ryan Gosling that's actually quite funny. I think it's a very funny. But you're right. It would be a very, it'd be a very specific version of Santa we would see with Jim Carrey. But he surprised me in the past. So I'm not going to tell you right now that I wouldn't watch it. So doesn't get my point though, unfortunately. I greatly resent Tom's comment that Patrick Stewart is pedantic, because that cut me real deep, because Patrick Stewart's like one of my favorite humans ever. <Uh-oh. laughs> And Patrick Stewart's smile makes me happy, and Christopher Plummer's smile terrifies me. So I'm going to give the vote to Patrick Stewart on this one, because his joy coming out of the Ebenezer Scrooge cloud in his version of that is very easily translatable to me to a Santa persona. So Patrick Stewart is my vote. Anthony gets my point.
Excellent. Anthony with the point. Let's review the score right now. Anthony is on top with 2 points. Tom is at 1 point. And so far, April has 0. So
can we just add that Tom's use of pedantic was his downfall in that last one?
Well, I think it would have been, I don't think I would have won that one with Julia anyway. But I will say that I would not want to see any three of these as Santa. They were all horrible choices.
Oh, I would have liked to have seen Patrick Stewart.
I'm actually really interested in both Patrick Stewart and Christopher Plummer.
Their faces are off.
I kind of want to see
their voices would be bad.
This Blizzard movie now.
We know the movies Jerry's going to pick to come on Tis the Cosmos.
So, April, on this next question, you have to win it to force a tiebreaker with Tom. Anthony, you are locked in to go to the speed round. However, you can increase your lead with the point here and make it even that much harder on whoever follows you into the speed round. So you want to think about that. So for our fourth question here of the debate round and our final question, April, we'll be starting with you. Which Christmas movie has the best score or the best soundtrack?
Okay, so I picked Anna and the Apocalypse. And I know this is kind of a, I don't want to say it's a cult movie. Not everybody has seen Anna and the Apocalypse, and it's going to go against some pretty heavy hitters. But we are looking for the Christmas movie with the best soundtrack, not the movie with the best Christmas soundtrack. So I picked Anna and the Apocalypse because it's pretty much year-round listening. So most music from Christmas movies is Christmas music. And people like us, we might be able to listen to Christmas music year round, but most people don't. They've got their Christmas music playlist. They might pull out, once here and there. But Enemy Apocalypse, the majority of that music is, it's year round listening. It's got really good songs on it. I lost my train of thought. So, okay. Give me a minute here. Let me regroup. Okay, so the songs from Man of the Apocalypse are year-round. So it does have Christmas movie or Christmas songs on the soundtrack. But, you know, a lot of the actual songs, like, what is it? I think it's called Brand New Day. No, it's Turning My Life Around. That song is actually something that you can play, you know. I listen to that song going to school every day, or back when I did go to school every day, because it's just a peppy, fun song. And the majority of the soundtrack, you know, they're fun songs that you can listen to all year long. So I know most people are not going to pick this for, you know, their number one choice, because there are so many other movies out there with bigger Christmas scores. But those are primarily Christmas songs. You listen to them at Christmas, and then the rest of the year you forget about them. So that's why I picked Man of the Apocalypse, because it's something you can listen to in July. It's something you can listen to in March. It's something you can listen to in October. Yeah,
I went with Home Alone, and I am just going to say that Home Alone has this magical sound about it. John Williams' music here is by far some of the most iconic, and I will say some of the most iconic, because I will go ahead and acknowledge that Anthony's choice is also extremely iconic. You're not going to find a soundtrack out, a Christmas playlist out there without John Williams. You're just not. The difference between Home Alone as opposed to others is that it's got a more diverse range of music than some of the others do. I will say, like, that main theme song has influenced music heavily. I don't think you can listen to the title soundtrack of Home Alone that they call the main title Somewhere in My Memory, and not hear its influence in music in other movies. I mean, when I hear it, I see definite influence. I see its influence non-Christmas movies. There are elements that you can hear from, like, Hedwig's theme in Harry Potter that sound like it's heavily influenced by this. You can't say that about any of the other ones, any of the other arguments that are going to be made throughout the rest of this. Also, taking the rest of the soundtrack out of play, I'm going to just say this is the single best version of Carol of the Bells I've ever heard in my entire life. And I listen to it a lot every year. But the music, it's iconic. It takes you away to a magical place. You gives you all the Christmas feels from the get-go. And I can listen to it at any time. And there's not one single part here about murdering anything, which is a nice thing for me for Christmas movie soundtracks.
Alrighty, Anthony.
So first of all, I just want to thank Todd for letting me define A Charlie Brown Christmas as a movie, because I feel like this special and the soundtrack in particular are too important to the modern Christmas canon and the season to have excluded from a question like this.
Let me clarify that. That was a judge's decision. All four judges were in on that.
So thank you, all of the judges. I just want to start out as well by saying I interpreted this movie, this question, not as loosely as April. I thought it was implied that it was the best Christmas soundtrack, but, you know, to her point, it doesn't have that word in the question. So, but the best way for me to describe the score to A Charlie Brown Christmas is it's like a warm hug. It's like engulfing yourself with a blanket when you listen to it and immediately being transported to Christmas Eve or Christmas night when the rest of the house is asleep and you're sitting alone in the living room with only the lights and the Christmas trees on. And you're just in the coziest place of the year, the coziest time of the year. And that's the mood it puts you in the moment you hear the first few notes of its jazzy tunes. There is no better word to describe Vince Guaraldi's score work here than iconic. From using real children for the choir and Hark the Herald Angels Sing, which gives it an air of realism, right? To developing the theme that will be used in the Peanuts media as their theme song for decades. Whether someone knows or not these works are from this soundtrack, everyone knows the music. Christmas Time Is Here has gotten countless covers over the years, not to mention has been used in other Christmas episodes of other media. And without, Guaraldi's score sets the whole tone for the entire special. And this special would be nowhere near as iconic without it. And then you look at the soundtrack as a whole, some of the songs that didn't necessarily make it into the special, like his version of O Tenenbaum, My Little Drum, the Christmas song, There is no other soundtrack that puts me in more of a warm, fuzzy Christmas mood the second I put it on. There's like no other soundtrack I'd rather decorate my Christmas tree every year or two. If Christmas was a sound, this would be it. And I think it helps. It's part of what helped make the Peanuts so synonymous with the holidays more than anything else. And while Home Alone and Anna and the Apocalypse are both amazing in their own rights, no one is arguing that. And in the Apocalypse, the way I interpreted the question as in a Christmas soundtrack, and in the Apocalypse isn't the most Christmassy soundtrack. While Home Alone is amazing and iconic, I think Charlie Brown edges it out a little more iconic wise.
I'm glad you made that qualifier on there, because you did in fact stress when we did the Home Alone episode how John Williams' music was transformative for Christmas music. It's so iconic. It's inseparable from Christmas.
And you literally said 2 weeks ago during the question of the week, no other soundtrack beats Alvin Scaraldi's Charlie Brown Christmas.
The question was, what Christmas movie has the best score soundtrack?
I do enjoy Anna the Apocalypse, but Kitty Pop music, but bringing Kitty Pop music to discuss against John Williams and Vince Guaraldi is not a good way to start, April.
I'm a risk taker.
You are a risk taker. But unfortunately,
there's
a reason that when you do actuaries, you know, and things for insurance, when you're a risk taker, you have higher premiums because you're more likely to fall dead. And I would say that your argument has already fallen dead on this. So I'm going to go ahead and just talk about Anthony's movie for the rest of the time here. I cannot argue that Vince Guaraldi is not absolutely iconic and amazing. What I can argue is that when I look at what I'm going to listen to long-term, what I'm going to put on and play on repeat, I'm going to get bored by Vince Guaraldi before I am John Williams. And I'm not just talking like this. I'm talking like John Williams in general. His compositions have such a range of emotions.
I would agree with you about Williams in general, but we're talking about
I'm getting into that. Vince Guaraldi soundtrack is really, really one note. There's not a range of emotion
I think the hook from Home Alone, and that's it. You act like he's some big, huge composer, but it's like, do you hear his stuff on the radio at this point? No, he's got the score, which is great, but tons of scores are great.
I do actually listen to scores quite regularly. I enjoy them a great deal. If we're trying to talk down John Williams' soundtrack,
if you're looking at my Christmas playlist,
there is John Williams on mine.
For sure. There's none on mine because I don't need some classical.
Well, it's not just a classical hook. If you listen to Carol of the Bells, or he does a version with Mel Tomé on here, who is again iconic. Well, on my Christmas playlist, I don't have anything about beating zombies to death. That just is not Christmas to me.
See, that's not on my Christmas playlist. That's on my regular year-round playlist
I feel like
I'm also going to say, back to the argument I made about longevity. When did Charlie Brown Christmas come out? When did the soundtrack come out? It is still getting like accolades. It's still on iTunes charts and Amazon charts and streaming charts every Christmas season. It's the second best jazz selling album of all time. And the artist formerly known as Prince played it at his last live show before he passed away.
He also died of a drug overdose.
This thing is like,
there were some serious questionable decisions on his part.
Are you questioning that Vince Guaraldi's a terrible
decision? I don't think that saying that just because Prince played him at his last concert is good, because Prince was also high.
That it's a Christmas.
And also, I don't think
it's a Christmas soundtrack that put a new song into people's Christmas canon. Christmas time is here, and it took a song and defined the Peanuts with it.
Also, we're looking at. I also want to remind you, though, when we're bringing in the artist formerly known as Prince, he was at the time he died as well a non-Christmas celebrating Jehovah's Witness who believed Christmas was evil. So again, his opinion on what should be in a Christmas canon and should not be. Is not one we should take much credit from.
I think that's really far reaching when you're trying to make
it. It's not when you have no concept of Christmas and you admittedly have never celebrated Christmas or been like tangentially connected to Christmas. Michael.
Neither is Sirius Black, but you know.
Neither is Hagrid.
Oh, thank you, April.
But I do want to point out that Sirius Black won that argument. So.
All right, April, give us your closing argument for Anna and the Apocalypse.
Anna and the Apocalypse is something that you can listen to year round. It's not pegged into Christmas. It's not on a Christmas playlist. It's not something that comes out once a year. And it's fun. So, like I said, I'm a risk taker and I'm comfortable taking that risk. I like the soundtrack. It was, what is the Christmas movie? The question was, what is the Christmas movie with the best soundtrack, not the best Christmas music on it? Because, you know, we can pick a million Christmas songs, but.
Again, judges, I appeal to you. You know as well as I do that songs like Soldier at War don't really have a place here. We all know the question and the context here. We're arguing semantics. Christmas was definitely part of the equation here. So I'm only, again, going to address the Home Alone. I do want to rebut what Anthony has said about the longevity. Just because something has been around longer does not make it better, just because they're both still relevant. You're going to hear them all the time. Again, I don't want to dismiss Vince Guaraldi in any way. His music is iconic. Again, though, if I'm looking for an over-encompassing soundtrack that I'm going to listen to, Vince Guaraldi's his approach to jazz does get a bit repetitive. It feels more of the same, whereas there are definite breaks and there's a lot more range of emotion, which for me, music emotion is important. And there's a lot more range of emotion. It evokes a lot more. And I moved a lot more when I listen to something like John Williams. And also, I mean, just musically speaking, the compositions put together by John Williams and the other songs throughout Home Alone are all pretty well. The musical compositions of John Williams are unbelievable. And the music throughout the movie of Home Alone are also pretty darn fun.
Okay, Anthony.
I'm so sorry, April. I applaud you for taking a risk, and you know I love you as a person, but Christmas is implied.
She's also married.
Christmas is implied. Shut up in your face. Christmas is implied in the question. Now to what Tom said, now to talk to Home Alone for a second, there is no denying that John Williams is an iconic composer, and there's no denying how great the Home Alone soundtrack is. But you're correct about longevity. However, if you turn on any 10 SiriusXM radio Christmas channels during the season, you're likely to hear more Vince Guaraldi than John Williams. Because I think it's a little more timeless. Just a little bit. I think it's more popular in mainstream culture than John Williams's music. And it's part of what makes a Peanuts Christmas, a Charlie Brown Christmas, so special. And if there's any doubt as to how special that television episode and its music are to people, look how upset people were that it's being taken off the air. If there's any doubt how popular the music is, again, I point you to the charts around Christmas every year, Christmas time every year. It's always topping them. And I just want to end with two arguments. Number one, Todd, if you would like the audio from a few weeks ago where Tom said in an episode, I don't think anyone's going to argue that Vince Guaraldi's Charlie Brown Christmas soundtrack is the best Christmas music soundtrack out there.
I don't think those are my exact words.
Number one. And number two, paraphrasing.
That's dangerous.
And number
I would prefer you not to paraphrase. If you don't have an exact quote, don't say it because I would. That's misleading.
Fine, you can strike that from the record, Todd, but I'll still send it to you for the episode. And but I'm just going to end with what I said in my opening argument, that if Christmas was a sound, if there was one official soundtrack to Christmas, it would be this.
All right, Jerry, you're probably our most music guy here. What do you think about this argument?
This is easy. It's Home Alone all the way. John Williams, what he did in the score is completely beyond anything Vince Guaraldi does in his score. And I'm just talking the score. We can even get into the soundtrack, but the score itself is so iconic that the song that he created somewhere in my memory is still played all the time at Rockefeller Center. I mean, Anthony even said that on one of the episodes. I mean, it's just, it's nominated for an Academy Award, whereas you know, "Christmas Time Is Here" by Vince Guaraldi wasn't even nominated for you know, an Emmy or anything. That right there tells me that it's John Williams is more amazing. Not to mention his musical prowess in general, how he creates fugues, he uses the celesta to evoke all sorts of emotion. As a score, it's better, but as a soundtrack, let's not even just the songs in the movie. We have "A Holly Jolly Christmas." We have "Somewhere in My Memory." We have "Silver Bells." There's "Sleigh Ride." There's "Please Come Home for Christmas." There's "Run, Run, Rudolph."
Jerry?
There's.
These are unfair.
I know, but
I did stick strictly to the. I was arguing for the score.
You did stick to the score. Okay, fine. So I'll strike that from the records. Score wise, he still composes the mess out of Vince Guaraldi. It's "Home Alone," no contest.
All right, so that's one.
As a musician,
I want to make known to Anthony. Did you catch that? I stopped and corrected what we were discussing to limit it back to what I said.
Well, just like I struck from the record something that
I had to point that out and ask for it.
Hold on. Let April talk.
Is this a point or a vote on the fact that Jerry loves this?
No, he was saying my arguments for John Williams.
No, his argument for John Williams that his score was timeless, that no one has touched it, including Vince Guaraldi, I agree with completely.
Yep.
So it's a point for Tom.
All right. And Julia.
So unequivocally, the winner of this is Vince Guaraldi. Also as a musician, I may not be a band director, but I did play the French horn for 17 years. So here's my argument. I love John Williams. One of my favorites, not my favorite, but one of my favorites. And he's consistent in everything that he does. He really is. Tom made the argument that you can even hear trickles of Home Alone in some of his other scores, which you can. And this is something that lots of composers do, right? You hear echoes of their previous work because it's like their theme almost, right? Their own composer's theme themselves. John Williams knows what to do with the French horn. And let me tell you one thing, I appreciate that in any composer. So I love that. I hate jazz. I hate jazz more than I can even express to you because
that really hurts.
It's disorganized. I know.
Really?
I know it.
It's
a fault of mine. I am not a jazz fan. I like orderly music. So for Vince Guaraldi to be able to do what he did with music and let me love every second of the jazz he infuses in Charlie Brown Christmas surpasses to me as a success than what John Williams can do with Home Alone, even though what John Williams does with Home Alone is sublime. So that's why Vince Guaraldi wins for me. Nothing sounds more Christmas to me than Vince Guaraldi's score for Charlie Brown Christmas. There's a ton of nostalgia built up in that, admittedly. But as we say on Tis the Podcast quite a lot, nostalgia packs a really heavy punch. So for me, the music not only makes me think of Christmas, but he makes me think of my brother and my mom and my dad and the Christmas tree and all of that.
I want to skip all of that.
Okay, hold on. So now I got to call
Jerry
you out on the stuff they called out to me. Yeah.
This is back to whose argument was better. So
we're not arguing for what all John Williams has done, right? Are we just arguing for what John Williams did on Home Alone? I'm also arguing for what Guaraldi did on this one, because as far as I'm concerned, I don't like anything else he's done, nor can I even admit that I've heard any of it much, because I don't care for it. For me, it wins on its own merits. Whether we do take the whole backlog of library of the composer into consideration, for me, it wins both.
All right, Michael, what do you think?
Well, Todd, thank you for having Julia go after Jerry, because I cannot in any way have as good a presentation as Jerry did for this. And that being said, Anthony said, you know, it's the song he sits down to the fire and trims the tree. And that's the reason why I'm giving that point to Anthony, because that is exactly what I do. And that's a big thing. That was the most compelling argument I heard.
Does this mean we don't get to do the tiebreaker?
I love it. No tiebreaker.
And I'm just gonna complain about not being able to do number three, because I really did want to put a little smackdown on Anthony.
Actually, I wanted that too.
So I'm just gonna go on record to say that I accept the fact that I lost, because I can do that, Diaper Tony. I'm a little sad that I missed out on number three.
Crooked April, maybe round two will be better for
I'm really sad that we're not doing number five. I'm just gonna admit that.
I am too.
I had that one in the bag without a question. There's no way.
Anthony is moving on with 3 points. Tom, you are moving on with a point. So, Tom, you have your work cut out for you in the speed round. Just to let you guys know,
Bye, Felicia.
Just to let you guys know that you have not heard these questions before. Whoever answers first will go first. You have 20 seconds uninterrupted. I will attempt to ring a bell, but I'm not sure if it'd be picked up. So if it does not, I will probably, if you guys go too long past the time limit, I will hit the mute button to keep it from influencing the judges. And then there will be a 10-second rebuttal. But the strategy of this round is the clock does not begin until you begin speaking. So you have some time to gather your thoughts. But as soon as you start speaking, the clock will begin. The first question of the speed round. Recently, Kirk Russell and Mel Gibson are two 1980s actors, movie stars who have taken up the mantle of Santa Claus. Which 1980s action movie star should also be Santa Claus?
Bruce Willis. John McClane.
Tom got Bruce Willis first.
I'm just going to make the argument Anthony agreed with me.
Sylvester Stallone.
All righty. Tom, you will go first, and your answer, Tom, you will go first. The clock will not start till you begin speaking.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and say Anthony agreed with me, so that's a pretty big plus in my corner right now. Number two, I want to be able to understand Santa's voice when he talks, and that is not going to happen. The kids do not want to try to interpret Santa. Santa has to be able to translate and speak all languages. Sylvester Stallone barely speaks English, his first language, and I'm out.
Sylvester Stallone's...
I'm out. That's all I need.
20 seconds.
Sorry. All right. Okay.
Sylvester Stallone speaks his own language, number one. Number two, he didn't make the case for why John Willis should be Santa. He only made the case...
I'm sorry, who's John Willis? Who's John Willis?
Say,
I don't...
God damn it. Bruce Willis. He didn't make the case for why Bruce Willis should be Santa Claus. Well, he only made a case against Sylvester Stallone. And as for Sylvester Stallone, picture this. A Santa origin story. Okay. You had somebody fall off the loop roof.
Alrighty. I gave you a few extra seconds there, Anthony, because you were interrupted by Tom. As soon as you start speaking, you get a 10-second rebuttal, and time will start when you start speaking.
I did. Okay, then I'm going to take back what I just said and say it again, because that's only fair. I did make a case. I said it was so obvious that even Anthony said the same thing. Bruce Willis would make an amazing Santa, has a nice voice for it. He's got the general...
All right.
The bell came through nicely, by the way, Todd.
And oh, well, thank you. And Anthony, your 10-second rebuttal.
Santa origin story, Sylvester Stallone, guy with a Philly accent, becomes Santa Claus. The end. Guy from Philly. Rocky's from Philly, guy with New York accent.
All right. And that is time. Michael.
Tom, because one, Anthony agreed with him initially, and two, we don't know what language he's speaking, so it's Tom all the way.
All right,
sorry,
okay,
Anthony.
Jerry. All right, Tom. Jerry,
that's an easy one, Tom. Yeah,
going with Tom. All right, so Tom gets the point. Julie, you don't get a vote, but how would you have win on this one?
Also, Tom.
Alrighty. right. Next speed round question, and it's now 3-2. If Tom gets this one, we have a tied game here. Next question. Who is the Hallmark Christmas movie queen?
Danica McKellar.
That was it sounded like you were still speaking. I am going to take a leaf out of April's book and go for the risk taking here and go Candace Cameron Bure.
All right. Tom, your time will begin as soon as you start speaking.
The Hallmark Queens. And Anthony agrees every time that it's Danica McKellar. We all have this great affinity for her from childhood. She was everybody's sweetheart. And she grew up and kept that. She's got this innocence, this spirit that you just connect with. Candace Cameron Bure, again, I'm going to point back to every episode of Tis the Podcast where she's been brought up. Anthony has a visceral reaction to her. I don't like her.
All right. Anthony, time will begin as soon as you start speaking.
Do 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 do. Can I just ask a question before Anthony answers?
What's that?
How much do you hate me right now for taking your girl?
The question was, who is the undisputed Hallmark queen? It doesn't necessarily say who is the best Hallmark actress. Without a doubt, it's Candace Cameron Bure. She has the biggest filmography on Hallmark. She beats out every other actress. You can't deny she's the queen of that channel. She's who they plug more than any other actress every Christmas season. Every Christmas season.
All right. Tom, your 10 seconds will start as soon as you begin speaking.
I'm going to go ahead and chime in. That is not entirely true. Lacey Chabert has as many movies almost as her. She's just not doing it as much anymore. She has taken a step back by choice. Lacey Chabert had Candace Cameron Bure beat. Oh. That 10 seconds is fast.
All righty. Yep. Anthony?
That's what she said. Tom said almost. He used a qualifier. Candace Cameron Bure has the biggest filmography and does the most promos for the Hallmark Channel. She's a queen.
I believe my statement was Candace Cameron Bure has almost as much as Lacey Chabert.
All right, Jerry, what'd you think?
You said the reverse.
Just like the Home Alone question, this one's super easy. It's Danica McKellar. And Tom had the better answers. He's had the better answers, man. That's why.
I smell collusion.
There's no collusion.
All right.
Right.
All right, Julia.
Oh, do I get to vote on this one? No, I thought I was being excluded because I'm a little, I don't know, because I'm on the podcast with them. Okay. I'm going to actually go for Anthony on this one because of the wording of the phrase. As far as the Hallmark queen, I've seen her stinking face on Hallmark so much lately that she gets way more airplay. Therefore, I will vote for the argument there.
The only reason you didn't get to vote for the last one was Michael and Jerry both went with Tom. So it was.
Oh, it's math. That's a lot of math. Yeah.
Math is about the math. Julia.
All right.
Actually, I didn't even know that.
All right, Michael.
I'm so glad, Michael.
Danica Patrick. She's the queen.
Is that April's? April, did you vote for Danica Patrick?
Me? No, it would have been Candace Cameron Bure, like in a heartbeat. Like, she literally. No, I'm not going to make your argument for you. You could have gone a lot of places with that answer.
If I weren't trying, I have to admit, if I weren't trying to just throw Anthony by stealing his answer earlier on, I would have said Candace Cameron Bure made the argument for her.
Yeah. You were such.
But I knew the moment Hallmark was said.
As soon as he said it, I was like,
I knew what Anthony would say.
Okay, Tom has come back, tied it up 3-3. So we have a ball game here. So our next speed round question. Really, we want to know, what is the best children's Christmas movie?
Elf!
The Grinch. The new animated Grinch.
All right, Anthony.
As Disney has taught us, the best children's movies also appeal to adults, and there's no better Christmas movie that covers both those bases than Elf. It teaches about family, blended families, adopted families. It embodies a Christmas spirit. It teaches everyone the best way to spread Christmas cheer, singing loud for all to hear. It's atmospheric. That kids can see themselves in Buddy. He embodies a childhood wonder. And
all right, Tom.
The Grinch is designed obviously for children by making a child a first person perspective character. And I would say, as far as Buddy goes, it's problematic for children. You've got kids, you're teaching kids bad things like running away from home. You're causing them to question the adoptive parent versus the bio parent, which is problematic for an adopted family and for an adopted child. Plus, he eats candy off of the street. Dadgummit, right. That was too fast.
Anthony, your 10-second rebuttal time will begin when you start speaking.
Go back to any episode of Tis a Podcast where Tom agrees with me about Elf, number one. And number two, The Grinch is too new to consider the best children's Christmas movie. It's 2 years old.
All right, Tom?
I don't think we can take age into consideration. It's at a disadvantage for that. But I will admit, Elf is a great family movie, but there are problems with it and what it teaches children, especially adopted children, how to behave in public, how to run in front of cars.
Elf and the Grinch. Julia.
Tom gets my point. I feel like it is more of a children's Christmas movie than Elf is just a fantastic Christmas movie without the children's qualifier, as much as I love it. So.
Alrighty. It's a point for Tom. Michael.
I'm going to give the point to Tom. I think that's just slightly a better movie for kids or children. And Tom laid out some of those points. But you can't see this because it's, you know, but it's very, very close.
This is hard, y'all. These time constraints are hard for those listening. This is way harder than it seems, isn't it, Anthony?
Well, because of math, Jerry, your vote will not count. But who did you think won that?
I will agree with the other parents and say Tom.
All right. Tom has roared back and taken the lead. 4-3.
Judges, I get it. You wanted to throw April a bone since she couldn't destroy me with Arthur Christmas. I get it.
I wanted to hear it brought up.
Back there at the idea that he is now losing. Like, his eyes are just, like, smoldering.
All right. Here's how it's falling, guys. Tom with 4, Anthony with 3. Anthony, you have to get this next question to come to a final tie-breaking question. So, no pressure at all.
Nevada just came in.
No, that's fine.
And this might be an interesting question. Which TV or movie reindeer is the meanest?
Kurt Russell loves The Christmas Chronicles 2. They're reindeer.
Anthony, we need a clarification. It's which reindeer? Singular reindeer. I need a reindeer's name.
Sure. It's a Dancer.
Prancer.
All right.
Prancer. What?
All right, Anthony, whenever you're ready.
It's going to be rough.
I almost said Jack.
Dancer is the meanest reindeer in the Santa Chronicles 2 because all the reindeer minus Dasher in that film are awful. They let Dasher get attacked by a giant Christmas cat named Jola, and Dancer is Dasher's you know, reindeer mate paired up on the sleigh. He, she should have been the first one to come to his defense, her defense. They like, she just stood by and
I think Anthony has confused the words fearful for mean. These reindeer were fearful of Jola. I'm going to go ahead and say that Prancer was mean and that Prancer did nothing to help himself and intentionally sat back in the movie Prancer and enjoyed watching the little girl continue to get in trouble because of all of Prancer's epic fails. Prancer did nothing to help himself, put the girl in danger numerous times. And
your 10 seconds starts when you begin speaking, Anthony.
I'm not confusing scared with mean because Dancer had six other reindeer to back her up and she didn't do anything to help her teammate. She wanted Dasher's glory. She wanted to be the first reindeer in the call. She didn't help. She could have saved her from getting attacked by a Christmas cat named Jola.
Alrighty, Tom.
Since there were six others and none of them did anything, that would make them all equally mean, quote unquote, again. Prancer allowed this little girl to put her life in danger. She fell and got hurt. Prancer had magic, as we saw, and didn't use it.
All right. Michael.
I'm going to give Tom the point because, like, Anthony, there were all the other reindeer didn't do anything in the Christmas Chronicles 2. So that's why I'm giving Tom the point.
All righty. Jerry?
Yeah, that was a good argument, man. Sorry. It goes with Tom.
All righty. Julia, because of math, your vote will not count. And to save your spot.
Oh, thank God for that.
To save your integrity on the Tis the Podcast, I'll let you keep your answer to yourself. So that means.
Neither was good. Can we just say that?
So, Tom.
Crappy arguments from both of us. I couldn't think of any actual reindeer.
Was Donner from Rudolph?
That's oh what my you guys God! Why did we say
reindeer from Robbie the reindeer?
Who's going to say it? Yeah. And no one said it.
It was Blitzen in Rudolph.
Yeah, or Comet,
or Rudolph. Him too. Yeah, that would have worked as well.
Or the coach.
So Tom makes a roaring comeback from behind and wins the game. I guess Tom's self-proclaimed winner of the show comes to pass. Thank you, everybody, for being a part of Merry Melee 2, and you all have a Merry Christmas. Thank you for listening to Christmas Clatter. Please leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. Join us on Facebook and Instagram at Christmas Clatter Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Clatter Podcast. Send us an email at ChristmasClatterPodcast@gmail.com. Visit our website at ChristmasClatterPodcast.com. And as always, remember to keep Christmas hope alive every day.
Thank you for listening to the Christmas Podcast Network.